The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Are you interested in the cutting edge of investing? That means frontier and emerging markets. And would you like to get started? Or perhaps you are already investing but still have questions. Welcome to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. On today's program, we'll take a look at news, trends, and background information that you should know to become an informed investor in new and emerging opportunities. Now, here is your host, Gavin Graham.
Hello, I am Gavin Graham, and I'm here with Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing each Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, and 2 p.m. in the UK. Welcome back to the markets in this new year, 2014. And this week, as with every week the program's been on, with a global roster of fund managers, analysts, and journalists on the ground in emerging and frontier markets or investing in them, I examine the whole concept of investing in these rapidly developing economies, try to clear up some of the misconceptions about them, and suggest courses of action that you, the investor, might be able to take to benefit from the growth we're seeing from these markets. Given I spend most of my professional career analyzing investments and hiring fund managers to handle large sums of investors' money, I figure I can spot the difference between promising investments and ones that maybe are not quite so promising. By the emerging markets, of course, we mean the BRIC countries, that's Brazil, Russia, India, and China, but it also includes such major emerging markets as Turkey, Chile, Mexico, and the Czech Republic. Today, we're going to have updates on Russia and Turkey. By frontier markets, we mean those less developed emerging markets like Colombia, Vietnam, Nigeria, Kenya, Bangladesh, Kazakhstan, Ghana, Slovenia, Botswana, and Slovakia. And today, we'll have a report on Mauritius, the island in the Indian Ocean, which is one of the major ways to play the African growth story. We'll be looking at Mauritius to see whether, in fact, it is part of the story that Africa is the new China, as a number of enthusiastic commentators have been suggesting. I'm also going to talk to an advisor coach who was a major contributor to our book, Investing in Frontier Markets, for some more help on implementing some of the concepts of investing in these markets within your overall portfolio and how you go about putting them into action. And then at the end of today's program, I'll have some exciting news about a new publication here at EFMI that continues our commitment to being one of the leading sources of information about emerging and frontier markets. It follows up on our two books on frontier markets and this program. Meanwhile, let's get started with the big picture for 2014. And for that, delighted to have back one of our regular contributors, Paul DeSisto. He's director and portfolio manager at M&R Capital Management in New York with about $500 million in assets under management. Welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing, Paul.
Thank you, Gavin. Very glad to be here.
And a happy new year to you too. So in this new year, we're going to be looking at some of the macro trends in frontier market investing. What would you see those macro trends as being in no particular order?
Putting them, basically identifying three, I would say the federal taper or the impending and expected federal taper. Political issues, both internationally and within the countries themselves, and the country's current account deficits and how they've been doing in that regard.
So,
if I could,
yes, please go ahead.
If I could mention something about the federal taper, the individual investor should expect it. There's not that much that can be done about it. It is going to happen. The issue is, when is it going to happen? What it is going to cause, and I think investors have to be aware, it's going to be decreasing global liquidity, and they're going to be capital outflows from a number of countries. And I think some of these countries that are going to experience the worst capital outflows are the ones that haven't been making the structural reforms that they need, specifically Brazil and India. So I'd be particularly concerned about those two countries and how they will be possibly more adversely affected by the impending taper than some of the other emerging and frontier markets we discuss.
So, as you said, the individual investor can't do anything about the Fed taper, which has already begun with the amount of U.S. bonds and mortgage-backed securities being purchased by the Fed being reduced from $85 billion to $75 billion, as was announced in late December. But you've already distinguished some areas like Brazil and India that might be at risk because of this, and therefore one would assume that investors would be underweighting those. Would Janet Yellen's confirmation as the head of the Federal Reserve merely just continue that process? In other words, there isn't going to be any change of strategy simply because Ben Bernanke has now stepped down in favor of Janet Yellen.
I agree with what you just said completely, Gavin. I don't think that Janet Yellen is going to accelerate the tapering that's already been announced. You've already described yourself how modest it is from a $10 billion reduction in the tapering. It's not going to be her foremost priority. I think maintaining easy money to continue the tepid economic growth and recovery in this country is going to be her first priority.
So if we're going to talk about political issues, which was the second major macro trend you identified, let's start with an area where there usually seems to be lots of political news and most of it bad, the Middle East. What's been going on there? Because some markets have actually done quite well, haven't they?
Yes, they have. There was the Arab Spring, which took place 3.5 years ago or so, and it looked very, very good for that part of the country, but there was a backlash to it. There are reactionary forces in all those countries, and it has been a disadvantageous for that part of the world for investors. But interestingly, some of the Gulf area type nations did rather well, and part of the reason for that is that couple of reasons. They do a lot of oil export, so that helps their current account deficits, and there's a lot of banking there, and banking has done well. So the Gulf area in particular has done quite well. We do think this is going to be more than a short-term phenomenon. The area continues to look attractive. I did some analysis on some of the funds there. The price-to-earnings ratio for the WisdomTree Middle East Dividend Fund is at 10. Similarly, the Market Vectors Gulf States has a PE of 13. The difference is accounted by the weights in the various countries. And I noticed that Gulf, GULF, which is the Wisdom Tree, had a 73% of its portfolio in just three countries, Qatar, UAE, and Kuwait. The other fund has 84% in those countries and a larger weight in countries like Egypt, Morocco, Oman, and Jordan. So the lesson here is that not all frontier markets are alike. They can easily use different benchmarks. And at first glance, using these numbers, the WisdomTree, with its lower PE and higher exposure to non-Gulf Middle East countries, may make a better value and offer greater potential than the other fund. So I think that's significant. On a bigger picture here, it's also interesting that both the UAE and Qatar have been upgraded by MSCI from frontier markets to emerging market status. So that's rather significant. That indicates there's a lot of confidence in the liquidity and the transparency of those markets to be included in the emerging markets index.
Absolutely. And given that there's such a big weight in both of the ETFs you mentioned, presumably that's going to help them in terms of greater acceptance by institutional investors and the like now that they're emerging markets rather than frontier markets.
Right, correct, indeed.
So
some
you
other
mentioned
political issues.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Please go ahead. No, I was going to say
some other political issues. We have a lot of elections coming up this year, and I think it's important to be aware of those. There are going to be elections in the spring and in the summer in Brazil, India, South Africa, and Turkey, and that has been something to be people have to be aware of and know what's going on here. Brazil and India, there's been a backlash in political reform and economic reform, and I think that's been reflected in their markets, whereas countries like Mexico seem to be doing better, and the Philippines as well, more interested in making their economies more transparent and better for overseas investors. So keep an eye on these elections that are taking place, South Africa in April, Indonesia in April and July, parliamentary elections in Hungary in April, Colombia in May, general elections in India in May, Turkey in August, and Brazil in October. So Turkey and Brazil in particular are two countries whose economic management is the subject of street protests by unhappy constituents. So I think that's an issue as well.
Absolutely. And indeed, you, I think, identified India and Brazil as being at risk because of their large current account deficits. You've got political uncertainty added to those current account deficits as well. Are there any markets that you think look more attractive within Latin America and Asia as opposed to the ones you've identified as having problems?
There was a very interesting article in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend about the two sides of South America or Latin America. And basically, the Atlantic-facing side, which is also just happens to be the Mercosur trade bloc, which is Brazil, Argentina, and Venezuela, seem to be have this anti-foreign taste or flavor in their environment. They're really not open to foreign direct investing as well as some of the countries on the western or Pacific side of Latin America, which include Colombia, Peru, Chile, and Argentina, and Mexico. And particularly with Mexico, I was impressed that the Pemex, the national oil company, is going to be opened up by the current president, Nieto, to foreign investment. And they'll be able to extract some of the profits because the oil company has not been developed as well as it should be. It's starving for capital. And I think that's a very, very important change. So I do like that western part of Latin America, again, Mexico, Colombia, Peru, and Chile, much more than I do the Atlantic-facing side of Brazil, Venezuela, and Argentina. And I don't think I need to go into the issues politically that are taking place in Venezuela and Argentina.
No, we're well aware of those and have discussed them in this program before with other guests. So to finish up, you did stress the importance of current account deficits, and I think maybe we could just briefly touch on Turkey, which has had some political uncertainty, but also even before the problems President Erdogan was having, its current account deficit had been causing its market to perform very badly indeed. Would you take that as maybe an opportunity now, or should you step aside until we see what happens on the political front?
Well, I've always thought that one should invest in something when the news is the worst, assuming the underlying fundamentals are there. The issue with Turkey, of course, has been a very, very bad corruption scandal at the national level. The market lost 27% last year, as measured by the Turkey Exchange Traded Fund, and there is one out there that invests just in Turkey. So the P.E., as a result of it losing all that value, is now a P.E. of 9, which is very, very low. And that may make it an opportunity there. Again, we are going to have the elections in there in August, and I would certainly keep an eye on Turkey and see how those elections play out as the summer ends.
So, in fact, that might well be the theme for 2014, in addition to the ones you identified, Paul, of things like current account deficits and the federal taper, that this is a year of elections, and we might well have rather more clarity on what government policy is going to be from some of these markets later in the year. But this may provide an opportunity for brave investors.
I agree with that, and I think that's why people have to be aware of what's going on in these countries politically. Just keep looking at the news and paying attention to what's happening.
That's great. Thanks very much indeed, Paul. Again, a very insightful and useful summary of what's been happening in the emerging and frontier markets, and I'm sure we'll be back to you in the not-too-distant future.
Sounds great, Gavin. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks to Paul DeSisto, Director and Senior Portfolio Manager at M&R Capital in New York, for that look at the big picture in emerging and frontier markets as we start the new year. When I come back from the break, I'll have a look at some specific emerging and frontier markets on one portfolio manager's radar screen and his analysis of them. Please stay with me for that.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
This program is produced by EFMI Media, which has become the leader in information about emerging and frontier markets investing. EFMI recently compiled the book entitled Investing in Frontier Markets: Opportunity, Risk, and Role in an Investment Portfolio, set for release by John Wiley & Sons later this year, and another book, also on frontier markets, which will be on store bookshelves later in the year. We are also launching a newsletter called EFMI. For more information, email info@emergingfrontier.ca. For more news about upcoming program segments, the books we have written, or the EFMI newsletter, please email info@emergingfrontier.ca. You can call 416-944-1750.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned into Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. To connect with our program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's toll-free in North America, 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to info@emergingfrontier.ca. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing. I'm Gavin Graham. To continue looking at what we might expect in this new year, 2014, and also perhaps what we should avoid, I have one of our regular contributors on the line. John Derrick is on the line from U.S. Global Investors in San Antonio, Texas. Welcome back to the program, John.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Now, the year we just had saw a pretty big disparity in terms of performance between both emerging markets, which were actually down a little, and frontier markets, which did pretty well, but also between individual emerging markets themselves. Are there any major overriding macro trends that you would think apply to most of these markets, or is it very much an individual country-by-country story?
You know, I think in a large degree it is country-by-country, but I think some of the key themes that tied performance together is current account deficit countries and countries that were negatively influenced or impacted by the taper. So I think that's kind of thematically you could kind of tie some things together, but obviously there are a lot of other issues that out there that affected the markets. I do think it's interesting, like, if you look at the best and worst performers last year, you know, Brazil, Turkey were among the worst performers, even places like Peru and Chile and things like that. Interestingly enough, within that emerging market space, Egypt actually was the best performer last year, which is a little surprising, given all the kind of headline news that you get out of that. So it is interesting. I think generally speaking, you have other areas like South Korea, outperformed, and Taiwan outperformed. Taiwan had a good year. So I think that kind of goes along with the current account situation in those countries. I think that was kind of key thematic trend last year. And going into this year, I think a lot of the same issues will carry through, at least for the first half of the year. And I think it may be, whereas last year the overall index is kind of flat to downish, and I think it may be another one of those kind of years where country-specific, kind of stock picking or country picking, if you will, maybe is more important than just trying to own a broad swath of emerging market countries.
No, indeed, and in this program we've often suggested that doing market cap weighted ETFs are not necessarily the best way of getting exposure to these developing markets. One of the markets that you actually picked as a buying opportunity, which I think caused a few people's eyebrows to raise towards the end of last year, was Greece. But actually, I think I'm correct in saying that it was actually one of the better performers last year. Do you still see that as being an attractive market for investors this year, if only because, again, a little bit like Egypt, maybe all the bad news was more than reflected in the price?
Exactly. Actually, I think within the emerging market kind of context, I think Greece is actually one of the most interesting markets for 2014. And we saw, just over the last couple of days, we've continued to see strong performance out of the Greek market. It was actually kind of interesting. They got their MSCI inclusion in late November. The market kind of ran up in front of that. And then in December, I'm going to say it was, flat to down a little bit or so. But then it has rallied back and is at new highs in the early part of this year. And it's kind of interesting. A lot of it, I think, has been driven by at least yesterday and maybe the follow-through today was on the back of an Irish debt issuance. There was big demand much stronger demand than anticipated for Irish debt. And you saw yields on all the peripheral European countries come down pretty dramatically in the last few days. 10-year Greek bond yields are at the lowest level, I think, in almost 4 years, 3.5 years, something like that. And that has actually been a key driver. And I know from our prior conversations that we've talked about Europe is kind of thematically you want to be levered to countries that are, have European exposure. And I think Greece is a very interesting and very direct way to play that coming out of, 6 years of recession. The currency risk is not what it is in other countries. You have the euro, et cetera. And so I think the macro themes of an improving Europe, and just being on the right side of the economic cycle within Greece specifically, declining bond yields, et cetera. I think Greece is actually one of the most interesting, emerging market countries, today, for 2014, even after a good year last year.
And then moving across the Aegean to its next-door neighbor, Turkey, which we were just discussing before the break, and where there's been a pretty bad performance. Obviously, we've had the political bribery and corruption scandal affecting the administration of the President Erdogan. But at the same time, also, you've had the Turkish lira sinking to a record low, and that the Turkish government, with the present political uncertainties, seems to be powerless to do anything to actually halt that. Do you feel that maybe Turkey is also looking to be an interesting opportunity, or as it's a current account deficit country and it's got a very short-term sort of debt profile in terms of foreign funding, this is one you might want to avoid for a while?
Yeah, it's Turkey's a tough one, actually, and I'll be honest, I'm struggling with it a little bit myself, just trying to figure out what the best course of action. I think the way I'm thinking about it today, though, is I think it's maybe an interesting opportunity. And I think in 2014, you may have kind of shorter term, maybe tactical opportunities. And I think Turkey may be one of those tactical kind of opportunities where, markets sold off very hard, actually, right at the end of December, has come back just a little bit, but we're still near the lows that we hit back in August, and I think while a lot of what is going on seems very politically motivated, and I think you have elections coming up, some local elections in March, and then a presidential election in the summer, so I think there's the risk with that kind of tactical positioning is that you get these headline risks either coming up to the elections or around elections, but on the taper aspect of it and what the, current account situation and all that, it's very interesting to me because in the U.S., the taper, the market was able to shrug off the taper and the market just moves higher. And the thought here in the U.S. is that, well, the market's been thinking about this thing for 6 months. The Fed talked about it in May and all that. And I think the same is true in a lot of these other emerging markets. I mean, at this point, I think a lot of the bad news is probably priced in, and I do think this was a little surprise. The most recent developments in Turkey, kind of on the political front, was a surprise, and it took the market off guard. But I think for a kind of a more shorter term time frame, I think Turkey is actually probably an opportunity today. But you may have to be a little more nimble than normal and watch the situation closely.
Okay, so. Other areas, I mean, we've talked sort of Greece and Turkey, the major emerging market and one that, again, didn't do a great deal last year, although certainly wasn't amongst the worst performing, was China, where there is obviously a current account surplus. That's not an issue for them to have to worry about. But at the same time, the reform program from the new leadership seems to be leading to fears of a clampdown in terms of Chinese credit growth and maybe the surfacing of some of the bad debt problems that have been hidden previously. Is there a major worry there for emerging market investors in general, or is this a Chinese-specific issue? And at the same time, is it actually maybe good news longer term because the Chinese government is now actually addressing some of the worries people had?
Sure. No, I think it's in the long run. I think it's a positive development. Actually, they're I think the current administration is serious about making real reforms and those kind of things, and we've seen that. And so I think those structural reforms are positive in the long run, and I think they do cause short term volatility and short term noise. But I think you know, China generally, I still believe, is on the right path, doing the right things, trying to do the right things, but in China they do it at their own pace and all that, and which is a good thing because they have more control over it. And so I'm not particularly worried about China. I think China will continue to do their kind of roughly 7.5% GDP growth. They're going to manage the economy, but they're also going to manage the reform side too. And so I think China, you know, if you went back a year ago, I think there was a lot of concerns about China and a lot of concerns about what their growth prospects were they going to slow down, and it's a lot of the same kind of issues, you know, where the structural reforms going to slow the economy, and what, you know, new administration, what was going to happen. But as we move through the year, I think China leadership actually built up credibility, or at least in my mind, has built up credibility. They kind of pulled it off, kind of we'll call it a soft landing type of scenario. And I think you're going to get more of the same out of the Chinese this year. And so from a kind of a bigger global context, I don't view it as a risk to, you know, global growth, or I don't think the Chinese are going to surprise you. I think you're going to get what you expect out of that. I don't necessarily think they're going to have those big positive surprises either, though, where you know, you're going to grow 8 or 8.5% and really, you know, catch the market off guard, and, you know, you have some large rally in Chinese stocks and those kind of things. I think it's going to be much more, you know, company specific. You know, one of the areas that have been very strong recently have been the casino names. Macau gaming revenues very strong in December. We've seen some of the casino areas perform very well. We've seen some of the technology areas perform very well. And so I think those are kind of areas of emphasis within China that I think are very interesting, more so than just, you know, buying China broadly.
So just to finish up then, John, are there any markets in the last sort of 90 seconds or so that we have that you would definitely want to avoid, at least for the first part of this year?
You know, You know, Brazil is still a little bit of a quandary for me, and I think your prior guest, I heard the last part of that segment, and kind of talking about those Atlantic-facing countries, I would actually generally probably agree with a lot of those comments, and so I think, to me, that's those are the areas that I don't have as much confidence in, and not sure what the positive catalyst would be for a positive change and positive change in the direction of the stock market and those kind of things. And so the key to me would be, you know, you want to, on the kind of flip side of the whole thing, is you want to be levered to the European recovery and the U.S. recovery, and and so to me, you know, maybe Mexico is a positive, but also kind of Eastern Europe and Turkey, I think, could also be in that boat. But those are kind of the positive things that I would say is how you want to be exposed, and maybe less exposed to just pure commodity plays.
No, well, that makes a great deal of sense, and I think it agrees with what a number of our contributors have been saying over the last few weeks and months. So thanks very much indeed, John, and I'm sure we'll be back with you in the not-too-distant future.
Great. Thanks, Gavin.
Thanks. That was John Derrick at US Global Advisors in San Antonio, not fortunately suffering too much from the awful weather that's been hitting most of the eastern and central United States, but a very insightful look at some of the markets that look most attractive for the emerging markets and frontier markets for the rest of this year, and maybe, as noted by our previous guest as well, ones you might want to be a little careful about, like Brazil. When I come back from the break, we'll have a look at what we can expect from the single most disliked of all the major emerging markets, that's Russia, and I'll be on the line with our Russian correspondent who's commuting between Moscow and Monaco these days. Please stay with me for that.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
This program comes to you from the EFMI Media Company. EFMI Media is one of the most comprehensive sources of information and analysis on emerging and frontier markets. EFMI Media has become a leader in knowledge, expertise, and analysis of emerging and frontier markets, both in opportunities to investigate and pitfalls to avoid. For further information about EFMI Media, go to www.emergingfrontier.ca or call 416-944-1750. EFMI Media produces this program. researched and wrote Investing in Frontier Markets, Opportunity, Risk, and Role in an Investment Portfolio, which is set for release later this year, and is currently working on a second book, also on Frontier Markets. EFMI also publishes a newsletter called EFMI Information and provides knowledgeable speakers on these and other topics. For further information about EFMI Media, go to www.emergingfrontier.ca, write to info@emergingfrontier.ca, or call 416-944-1750.
Hi, I'm Joe Swedish, CEO of WellPoint. We proudly support the March of Dimes and all they do to reduce the rate of premature birth in the United States. Though premature births have recently declined, still, 500,000 babies are born too soon each year. We're helping the March of Dimes fund cutting-edge research and community programs that help moms and their babies live healthier lives. Please visit marchofdimes.com and join us in working together for stronger, healthier babies.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned into Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. To connect with our program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's toll-free in North America, 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to info@emergingfrontier.ca. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing. I'm Gavin Graham. Now, we've talked on a number of occasions about whether the phrase the BRIC markets, that's Brazil, Russia, and India, and China, which was a great investing concept a decade ago and made people a lot of money for most of the last decade, still holds true to group those countries together in any discussion about emerging market. We've had a number of our guests suggesting that the four economies have developed so differently in recent years that there's really not much point in using this as an investing concept any longer. There have also been a number of comments that Russia's problems, particularly amongst the BRIC countries, are more serious than those of other BRIC nations. However, that's not the view of our next guest, who's been a contributor before to this program. On the line, we have Russian analyst James Beadle speaking from Monaco. But at the same time, James, I believe that you're spending a fair amount of time in Moscow at the moment.
Yes, that's correct. I'm spreading my time really between Monaco, where I've been living for the last few years, and Moscow, which I'm gradually moving back to, and I have responsibilities in both locations. Now, I happen to be in Monaco.
Well, probably better in terms of the weather anyway. But
very nice day.
Yes, well, that's good. I mean, obviously, one of the reasons for the people not being particularly enthusiastic about Russia are that there's some fairly obvious and high-profile issues such as corruption, poor governments, financial problems, and the like. Are some of those criticisms justified to begin with?
Well, certainly they are, and it's obviously a topic that we come back to whenever we talk about Russia, both with you and with investors around the world. I think it's quite clear that there was a massive deterioration in the corruption situation in Russia over the last 10 years. But at the same time as saying that, I think we can certainly see that there's been a shift over the last sort of 12 to 18 months, and we're beginning to see a real change in dynamic on the ground in the country.
So given that we're seeing some improvement from that point of view, what kind of outlook would you have for Russia's economy this year?
The outlook for the macro economy itself isn't hugely positive because the country remains so dependent on oil and gas. I mean, we're talking about the country which is the biggest single producer of oil and the biggest single producer of energy on a global basis. And so this really drives the GDP. If the oil price stays flat or goes down, it's very difficult for Russian GDP to perform very well. But that doesn't mean that there are not opportunities and the economy itself isn't developing at a ground level. And I think there's a lot of dynamicism which is hidden behind the macro numbers, which don't give the best picture necessarily.
And obviously, the major focus of everyone in Russia and around the world in the next month or so is the upcoming Winter Olympics in Sochi, starting, it's a month ago, it's from yesterday, I believe, is the actual start date. Has that been a diversion for the Russian authorities from making some necessary investment elsewhere? And what do you think might happen after the Olympics take place?
It's an interesting way to put the question. I think that there might be something to that. There has been a lot of energy and focus put into Sochi, and as I'm sure many of your listeners have noted, there's been a lot of corruption stories around the development of infrastructure for the Sochi Olympics. And I think probably the Olympics has never seen such a large-scale construction needed. They have really had to build everything from scratch. And so it might be fair to say that this has diverted energy and resources that could have been better used elsewhere for the overall economy. But at the same time, it's very clear that Russia will benefit very much from having such a major global sporting event and from having people coming in from all around the world and seeing that Russia has changed so much since the Soviet era. And so there's a lot of positive energy building up around the Olympics in Russia itself, even though, of course, we've seen some issues about terrorism and concerns like this. I think that the Olympics will pass very well. And afterwards, people will really feel that there's a fresh start within the Russian economy, and people will sort of begin to make their plans for the next few years.
And with that also, I think you'd suggested that maybe we might see a repeat of what Mr. Putin did in his first couple of years when he became president, in that a major focus on investment and reforms and structural issues in an attempt to actually move the story forward as far as Russia is concerned.
Yes, I think we've seen a big shift in Putin's attitude towards the management of the country over the last 12 months. And it's really reassuring, and not just, obviously, we saw him releasing the political prisoner Khodorkovsky, not just this, but a lot of stuff going on the ground in terms of tackling corruption and reducing bureaucracy and setting targets for improving the ease of doing business in Russia. It's really a sort of shift towards understanding that investment is what's needed for the country. And so I believe that we're going to see Putin being more and more constructive and positive over the coming years.
So that would obviously be good news. And again, one of the major points that people always make looking at investing in Russia is that regardless of all the governance issues, the stocks are sufficiently cheap to take a lot of the bad news into effect. In essence, you already are getting some attractive businesses at quite a big discount. Would that still be the case? And do you feel that investors might actually do quite well over the next period in Russian stocks?
Yeah, well, in terms of the valuation, I absolutely agree. It's clear that, I mean, there are very few countries in the world that have a lower valuation than Russia. Profitability has continued to improve over the last 5 years, and stock prices have struggled to stay flat. They've gone down in many cases. And so while this sort of picture and trend is going on, the valuation has been getting lower and lower. And as we see the political risk declining over the next year or two, then I think we'll start to see more potential for equities to improve on the basis of that. However, I would, of course, advise that people should be very careful and keep an eye on the oil price, which is by far the biggest driver of the actual index levels in Russia. And so, give or take, the oil, there's potential for a very positive performance of the equity market.
Now, you and I have talked before about the general belief that Russia has serious financial problems. I know you disagree with that quite strongly, but for those who maybe didn't hear our last conversation or a couple of conversations, could you actually give us a brief rundown of why Russia is not in serious financial difficulties? In fact, it may actually be quite well positioned.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a good example from over the period since we last talked is that Ukraine has borrowed $14 billion from Russia. And then in the last week, Belarus has borrowed $2 billion from Russia. Of course, Russia has political reasons for lending this money, but you don't lend money like that unless your economy is fairly stable. Russian debt to GDP is very, very low. In fact, I think the net level is negative because Russia has so much oil and gas revenue coming in that the fiscal picture is very, very stable. And so it's very hard for me to understand why anyone would consider Russia to be bankrupt. Of course, it's an inefficient economy and there are lots of problems and issues. But in terms of government financing and the macro fiscal and macro monetary situation, it's very stable and very healthy. And from this perspective, a very interesting place to invest.
So taking all of these factors into account, what do you think would be an appropriate advice for investors with Russia? Effectively that you are getting a market that's pretty cheap. There are reasons for believing that the government is likely to be pushing forward with its reform program, and that once the Olympics are out of the way, then the government's focus will be rather more on helping the growth path of the economy improve. Would that be a reasonable summary of what we've been talking about in the last little while?
Yeah, that's certainly the way I see it. And I think increasingly the way that I would encourage investors play it is to look for good mutual funds which are invested in Russia. I think the downside is very limited. But also the ETFs are really dominated by companies like Gazprom, which are not the most exciting names. And it might be worth looking for mutual funds which are playing smaller name companies and finding value in well-managed businesses.
So, in fact, that would be another vote by one of our regular contributors in favor of active management when looking at emerging or developing economies. Because, as you say, if you're buying passive ETF-type investments, then you're getting exposure to companies, as you mentioned, like Gazprom, that aren't especially attractive.
Yes, that's it. I mean, and to be honest, there have been times when I've said buy the ETF because it's cheaper and it looks like there's a big macro move going on. And I don't think there's a big macro move going on, so you need to be looking for value or finding skilled managers who can do that for you.
Well, thanks very much indeed, James. Really appreciate your insight on that. And good luck with the weather when you get back to Moscow. I hope it's not too cold.
Thanks so much, Gavin. Have a great rest of the show.
And you too. And our next contributor is actually talking about somewhere distinctly far removed from the icier climes of the Northern Europe and Russia, which we're just talking about. Our African correspondent, Samuel Okocha, is on the line from Lagos, Nigeria, for a look at Mauritius, the island in the Indian Ocean, which plays a major role in helping the development of African economies. Welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing, Samuel. I'm sorry, it seems, as is sometimes the case when we're trying to get hold of Samuel in Nigeria, we've just lost him. So why don't we actually go to break now, and while we're in break, hopefully we can actually regain the connection, and we'll be... it looks as though Samuel may be back online again. Samuel, are you there?
I'm there. I'm here. I'm right here.
Excellent, Samuel. I was just about to say we should go to the break, but now you're here. Let's talk about Mauritius, because it might not be the first country that you think about when talking about African markets, but it does actually have an exposure to the African economies. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just to give a brief background, Mauritius had been a strategically important British naval base and later an air station, playing an important role during World War II for anti-submarine and convoy operations, as well as the collection of signals intelligence. Independence from the UK was attained in 1968, a stable democracy with regular free elections and a positive human rights record. The country has attracted considerable foreign investment and has earned one of Africa's highest per capita income. Now it has an impressive track record of political stability and more than three decades of sustained economic growth. According to the World Bank, it's the easiest country to do business in Africa. A record it has held for some years now.
And would that be because of its superior infrastructure?
Absolutely, absolutely. Mauritius is well-developed. Roads are maintained and in very good condition. There are no railways, however, but public transport by bus is reliable and efficient. The country operates an efficient freeport and aims to become a major transshipment center, given its location between Africa, Asia, and Australia. Also, the country has five airports and a modernized telecommunications infrastructure with internet access reasonably widespread.
So what about the investment opportunities within Mauritius for our listeners? Are there any particular sectors that look interesting?
Absolutely. Well, the strategic location of Mauritius in the Indian Ocean helps it play a unique role in serving Africa, Asia, and, of course, the rest of the world in value-added business services. I will give an example to illustrate these points. Main One is a very, very popular company in Nigeria. It's a wholesale international telecommunications service provider. Yep. But it is run by Main One Cable Company Mauritius. So it has operational subsidiary companies in Nigeria, Ghana, and Portugal. So for international businesses who want to set up a cheap basis, Mauritius is a very good place to launch from. Also, there are opportunities in manufacturing. The manufacturing sector enjoys the advantage of preferential market access to Africa, Europe, and the USA. And that's because Mauritius enjoys this quota-free and duty-free entry into the European Union. It has also the same advantage in East and Central Africa. And of course, for the US market, you understand that the African Growth and Opportunity Act provides opportunities for African economies, of which Mauritius is one of them. So if you want to invest in Mauritius, manufacturing is a very good place to look into, among other areas like construction, property, hospitality, seafood, aquaculture, among others.
So to finish up here, Samuel, that sounds really interesting and really good news. Are there any downsides to Mauritius? For example, it's a relatively small country, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. No apparent political problems, but the small population implies some limitation. Of course, 1.3 million could be the challenge or seeming disadvantage for investors. 1.3 million people, of course, makes Mauritius one of the least populous country in Africa. But the interesting thing is this, the country makes up for this as a...
Excellent. Well, thanks very much indeed, Samuel. I think it's possible we might have lost you again, but we were just finishing up there anyway. Our thanks to our African correspondent, Samuel Okoja, in Lagos for that look at Mauritius. So it's relatively small, as he mentioned, only 1.3 million people, but it is a very vibrant free trade zone. It has quotas to enable access to the European and US markets. And as he mentioned, it's a very attractive base for companies operating in other African countries because of the tax advantages. We spend most of our time on this program analyzing the individual's markets and some of the major macro issues. But at the same time, it's important for investors to know how emerging and frontier markets fit into their overall portfolio. And I'll be talking about an advisor coach who helps advisors market investments to their clients in terms of how they should be positioned when I come back after the break. Stay with me for that, please.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Do you like what you hear about investing in emerging and frontier markets on this program? Would you like to learn more to increase your investing effectiveness? EFMI Media also publishes a subscription-based newsletter called EFMI. We'd like to tell you more about it. Drop us an email at info@emergingfrontier.ca. We've designed EFMI as a newsletter to provide expert and up-to-date news and analysis of opportunities in the same markets that we discuss here on Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. EFMI has information and analysis that you won't find anywhere else, and you can start receiving it by emailing info@emergingfrontier.ca.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned into Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. To connect with our program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's toll-free in North America, 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to info@emergingfrontier.ca. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the final segment of Emerging and Frontier Market Investing. I'm Gavin Graham. We've written a couple of books on frontier markets. The first one was entitled Investing in Frontier Markets, and the second one is Frontier Markets for Dummies, which is due out in March of this year. In both books, we stress the importance of working with the financial advisor to help position frontier markets and indeed emerging markets in your portfolio. So to actually look at the importance of that relationship, we had help in both books from advisor coach Jim Ruta, whom I have on the line from Burlington, Ontario right now. Welcome back to the program, Jim, and I hope it's not too cold out there.
Well, like I told you a minute ago, we're practicing our polar vortex dancing here, so it's working out great.
Indeed. I mean, again, earlier in this program, we were looking at the big macro picture with people like Paul DeSisto and John Derrick. But let's pretend for a moment you haven't heard the program, you haven't read our first book or the second book, or even looked at the New York Times or Bloomberg about frontier markets. If you are my financial advisor, I or your client, and have become interested, not really gotten serious about emerging and frontier markets, where might we start?
Well, you know, let's be honest. Emerging and frontier markets are just plain sexy. It just sounds right. Who wouldn't want to be on the edge and reaping the rewards of breaking new ground, you know, getting in on the ground floor, as it were? You know, I don't think there's any question that it's something many investors would want to consider. You know, the real question, I think, Gavin, is should they? And if they should, what's the best way to get started? You know, we have to start, I believe, with the right knowledge and understanding foundation. Even today, we've heard so many different things about, concerns and conflicts and changes in different marketplaces. So it really requires a basic understanding and knowledge foundation first.
And so, without necessarily tooting his own horn or her own horn too much, an advisor presumably would say to the client, this really isn't an area where you want to go alone, and we've got to work together fairly closely here, correct?
Yeah, without question. I think, you know, listening to this program, as I do prior to coming on with you, you know, it's just so obvious. There's so much going on in this market, and it's such a diverse place. I mean, from Mauritius to Moscow, for example, in 2 minutes, there's a lot going on. And I think there's really two perspectives here. There's the advisor's perspective and then the investor's perspective, and they don't necessarily match up. Now, if you're an advisor, you want to deal with emerging and frontier. You want to deal with emerging and frontier markets. You had better be ready for it. I think as an advisor, you have to study up. I think you have to read your book. You have to get all the market intel, all the resources you can. I think listening to this program is a big deal, because this is not just like any other market. It really isn't. It's so diverse a place really to work with. It's special, I think, and it takes specialized knowledge. And, you know, if you can't get this information or expertise as an advisor, then you either find someone who has it and refer investors there, or you don't do it. I think it's better in this case to do it right than make a mistake like this for the people, you know, in your clientele. Now, meanwhile, I think for investors who are considering emerging in frontier markets, they need to do some homework, too. For the same reasons advisors have to study up on the market, investors do also. Without some basic knowledge, they won't even be able to make reasonable decisions about entry into the market. And this is one of the first things advisors should recommend to anyone considering the market. Study it first. See how it works. Advisors and investors might even do this together using the resources that are available to them. Now, this kind of reminds me, it's an old goofy story, but it's interesting, I think, this way. As a wise old ski shop owner I knew out west years ago when I was a ski instructor, it was a long time ago, Gavin.
Yeah.
But he told me a story about how a happy young father one day walked into the shop and asked about getting into family skiing. He thought it would be a great idea. So the shop owner asked the man if he had a $100 bill on him. He did. And with that was walked to the back of the shop to the washroom. The owner asked for the $100, no problem. He dropped the bill into the toilet, still no problem. Then he flushed the toilet, and they both watched as the money circled the bowl until it disappeared down the drain. Still no problem. With that, the shop owner pronounced, now you're ready for family skiing. You know, Okay, it's just a story, but I think I've made the point, right? I suspect this sort of KYC process is necessary for anyone considering emerging in frontier markets, too. You have to be willing to watch some money disappear calmly, even if for a while, but the horrific volatility you could go through. So that takes understanding and practice.
And perhaps this would come to a point we've already touched on in previous conversations, the difference between risk and volatility, because obviously we believe quite strongly, Al Ahmed, my co-author and myself, that if you invest in these markets, you're likely to do pretty well in absolute terms over the long term, and the long term being at least 5, if not 10 years. But they're going to be volatile. The markets will move around a lot. All of those issues you were talking about earlier that we've already discussed in this show. The advisor has to be able to explain to their client the difference between risk and volatility, presumably. If they don't get that, then really they shouldn't be letting their clients even think about these markets because they are volatile, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. See, panic during volatility is as bad as flushing the toilet. And honestly, but with the right advice and counsel, investors can appreciate the nature of the ride they have to take to win in the long run, just like you say.
And so to finish up with here, Jim, with all the news coverage of things like the Turkish political crisis or the war in the Middle East or riots in Brazil, it's very easy for clients to get worried or whatever. To go back to your original point, people need to do their homework and advisors need to make certain that clients are comfortable with a longer-term story before they even begin to contemplate this. Otherwise, they will get all this bad news and they will be freaked out. Correct?
Yes, and absolutely. Look, unless you're looking for the elusive big or quick win, you know, like number five in the seventh at Aqueduct New York, you have to look at investing in all investing as a big picture. You know, it's a five-year project, if you will. That means what happens on any one day is relatively meaningless. It's just one of 1,825 days in that five-year project. You know, it's another discussion you can really only have before money changes hands. Because when you have it then, you don't have to worry about the morning news.
That's wonderful. Thanks very much indeed, Jim. And I'm sure we'll be back discussing more ways that advisors can make their clients comfortable with these exciting markets in the not-too-distant future.
My pleasure. Happy New Year, my friend.
And to you. Our thanks to advisor coach Jim Ritter for helping us make the leap from discussing the advantages of emerging and frontier market investing, but making certain that both the advisor and the client are happy. I'm Gavin Graham. Our producer is Al Emmett. We're the co-authors of Investing in Frontier Markets, now available in English-speaking markets, and Frontier Markets for Dummies, due to come to bookstores very soon, and the publishers of the EFMI newsletter, which we're preparing for launch in the next couple of weeks. For more information, write to us at info@emergingfrontier.ca. Again, that's info@emergingfrontier.ca. Thanks. Please join us again next week.
Thanks for listening today to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with host Gavin Graham. Be sure to join us again next Wednesday at 6 a.m. Pacific Time, 9 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for another edition. Have a profitable week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.